Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Previously on Lost.
You cannot change anything. You can't. Even if you try to, it wouldn't work.
Why not?
Whatever happened, happened.
Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? This place, we were brought here for a purpose, for a reason. All of us, each one of us, was brought here for a reason. Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
Horse?
You know Nice Cole.
You gotta find me, John. You gotta find me. When you do, Jacob.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
We have to go back!
We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast for Season 5, Episode 15, Follow the Leader. And what's a better name for a sub to an island of mystery than the Galaga? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm going to go with the constant, because it's a constant way off the island. The only constant way off the island.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and of course I'm going to go with the Nostromo.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm going with the compass needle, because it always knows the right direction to get back to the island.
Ooh. I like all those. No, yeah. Wrong answers this week on the Storm podcast. It's a show that covers Lost. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. The podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island for the very first time on Neil's compass. Each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. The first is a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. And then there's a second section called The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers, discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. If you look down at your podcasting device, you will see time codes that tell you when the calm starts and when the storm starts, in case you want to jump around or revisit this episode later. Thank you so much for listening to the show. It's the number one way to support us is just by joining us on this rewatch, and that way we can also support you if we're all just rewatching together. But if you feel like we need a little extra something else, or you could spare it, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers and find a way to subscribe to us monthly. And in exchange for that, we will open up our bonus content closet for you, which includes new stuff every week, every month, and access to all of our back catalogs since we've been a podcast. We've been generating bonus content, and that all lives on a very special feed that you could subscribe to. But that's not all. It's not just more podcasts for the podcast you subscribe to. We have activities that go on in a podcast-based Slack that we have that includes a book club meeting that went down, I think, last week, and some more additional podcasts that rope in other people from the podcasting universe, just in case you get tired of listening to our voices for hours every week. Especially feels like the first time where Joanna and Kristen Russo, the Buffering Podcast, are orbiting some haunted hunks.
Yes. If you're a patron, like, we almost have bonus content like almost every single day. Like, mm-hmm. It's a lot of content. So if you just can't get enough of us, there's a lot to go around if you're a Patreon subscriber. So it feels like the first time the podcast that I do with Kristen Russo, we are doing a trilogy of films that she has decided to call Haunted Hunks, the first installment of which is out and ready for your listening pleasure. We are doing Army of Darkness, and we're watching that If this comes out Wednesday morning, we're watching that tonight, Wednesday night, in a special Slack that we have. We are doing The Covenant, which is a bunch of himbo witches, as far as I can see. And Chris and I had a really good time trying to figure out what the plot of that movie was. And then we are doing Tremors. This is going to be our last one. And so those are all the films that we are watching this month. You can find the schedule for that up on our website, stormpodcast.com. And we also had a book club meeting over the weekend for Shadow and Bone. And it was, you know, when the Zoom chat is so big, there's the second page. That's how big the book club discussion for Shadow and Bone was. It was a lot of folks in there.
I didn't know that you could have multiple Zoom pages.
It's true. It's true. And so there were a ton of people in there. They did breakout rooms and it was really fun. And for next month, we will be reading The Underground Railroad, which is Colson Whitehead's book that's Barry Jenkins has adapted into a series that will debut on Amazon Prime May 14th. So we will be discussing that book on May 8th in the Slack. And then the TV series will debut May 14th. So that is what is up next on the book club. Once again, you can always go to stormpodcast.com to find out what's going on. You can follow us on Twitter at stormpodcast. That's a helpful place to know what's going on. You can email us, host@stormpodcast.com. We love to hear from you. We've got some great emails this week and every week. But I am going to start with a review we got because we love to get reviews. It's really helpful for us. So let us see what that is. This email comes from Lost in DXB from the UK. Really enjoying parentheses time capsule 5 stars. In the last 6 months, I've discovered the concept of pairing podcasts with watching episodes and absolutely love the way it extends the enjoyment of the episode beyond just sitting on the couch for an hour. Really enjoying this podcast and how it opens my eyes to layers I missed or didn't consider last time. I'm up to series 2, episode 19 at the moment, so if this does get a mention, I should get around to hearing it in early, mid 2022. So, hello from 2022.
You made it to 2022. We don't even know where we made still it to there. 2022 yeah. At this point.
Hope the rest of the pandemic went okay. So nice to see you. All right, so that is it for reviews. So please do leave us the reviews. It helps us find more people who are just starting to rewatch Lost, and that's a fun thing.
And it allows us to time travel, apparently.
Yeah, yes. that review is our closed paradox object for our podcasts.
All right, and then let's see. Let's go to some emails that we have. So we got a great email. Speaking of time capsules, I forwarded you guys this email. But this email came from Jessica, who's like an OG Lost fan. And she sent over a ton of live journal icons from her time watching Lost. She wrote, "Longtime listener, first time caller. A couple weeks ago, there was a moment in the podcast where you guys questioned whether there was very much Jack hate back when Lost was originally airing. And I'm here to verify that there definitely was. I quote unquote followed several people on LiveJournal who took requests from their quote unquote followers and created icons for specific shows they obsessed over. LiveJournal icons, the original memes, LOL. About six months ago, I stumbled across a folder of such icons that I had saved on an external hard drive, which I hadn't looked at for a good 8 years or so, and it brought me so much joy during a patch of time when I was feeling pretty down. At least within the groups that I followed, there were a lot of jabs at Jack and how frequently he cried. Okay, yes, that's some men can't be emotional toxic masculinity shit, but for the sake of nostalgia, the icons about it gave me some laughs. I thought I would share them with you as always. As well. Oh yeah, by the way, Jack and his tears went by the OTP shipping name of Jeers. Behold. And then she sent us a bunch of icons. It's just about Jeers. And then just sent us a bunch of other icons that are really fun. And I thought I would back up. And Jessica went on to say that she likes the podcast. This is her first time rewatching since the original. Following along with this podcast gave me much needed distraction and something to look forward to every week when I felt like things were falling apart around me. I was one of the fans that really hated the ending of Lost the first go round. But after listening to your explanations and deep dives, I think it was simply because I just didn't understand the ending at the time. This rewatch has been a whole different experience and I appreciate the show so much more, which I honestly didn't think was possible. You guys are great. Jessica, that was the goal of this podcast, kind of.
We
to
did it.
Change everyone's mind about the ending of Lost. So
that's
I'm
it.
Really
podcast over. We don't have to do anything.
Unmelted the Iron Throne as we intend. Oh wait, no, sorry, that was the other one.
I just thought also we didn't get a ton of comic mills, so I thought I'd read this section from Emily Vandervoof's recap of this episode of Lost because it's going to back up Jessica's point. Here's Emily on Jack. Jack's been Lost main character for most of its run. He's been sidelined quite a bit this season, where the island might as well have been the main character, and he's been an insufferable idiot for much of that time. Most Lost fans, myself included, have kind of gone all over the map with Jack. At first, he was relatively charming, but his insistence that he knew the right way to do things on any occasion quickly grew grating, especially on a show with so many alpha male leader types who seemed like they had more of a temperament for the job. Jack was brash and always pressing forward to do his own thing. Much of season two is spent by fans and critics trying to figure out if he was George W. Bush analog, a line of discussion that proved mostly fruitless. So he pretty much became the leader by default. Jack, however, has cycled back around to being an interesting character as the show has learned to mostly poke holes in his self-certain pomposity. I'm sure that Jack will eventually be redeemed and shown to be one of the good guys in the final season, but seeing how people have learned that sometimes his ideas don't pan out, Kate's skepticism of his H-bomb plan was a nice nod to this, although Saeed seems on board. So, so some Jack assessment. I agree, this is around the time when I personally start turning around on Jack. How are you guys feeling? What's your Jack temperature right now?
I mean, I definitely love the jeers thing. I think that's fun. I definitely think the show has made an interesting pivot. Like, first, early in this season, we saw Jack sort of, you know, give up a lot of power and sort of follow orders from a bunch of different characters who he would not have followed previously. And then we've also seen Jack sort of make a decision about his destiny, and that's bringing back a little bit of the old Jack, but I'd like this version a little bit better. We'll see how this bomb plan works out.
I was liking it more before the bomb plan. Like, we had a soft, pliable Jack that was just doing whatever Sawyer wanted him to do and calmly letting everybody know what the plan was. And then Faraday showed up and convinced him there's Sky Cake. And now Jack is going to kill everybody. He's going to kill everybody.
Just like the Time Daddy to cause a little panic.
Oh, we miss you, Time Daddy.
I agree. Like, the bomb, I don't know. I share Kate's skepticism of the bomb thing. And we've talked a little bit, maybe in the storm, but like about why Jack in particular would be so invested in the bomb. We'll talk about it in the calm this week. It's going to be fine. But yeah, I think Jack taking orders from Sawyer was a preferred Jack. Where Jack is right now, maybe I'm not a huge fan of, but there's more of Jack to come that interests me. So we will see. We shall see. All right. So I think that's it for emails and quoting Emily Vandervoof. We will be watching the finale is a two-parter. We'll be watching that in the Slack this Saturday. All three of us will be there. Block out 2 hours of your life if you want to join us. This is a doozy, right? Isn't this it's like maybe the doosiest of finales, I think. Other than
I think
the series
the episode.
Finale. Yeah.
Like there have been a lot of good Lost episodes when we talk about like good Lost episodes. But if you had to pick one that I think a lot of the show orbits around, it's this one.
It's kind of this one. So I hope you join us. If you're not part of our Patreon, you know, you can join at any level and be part of the Slack and join us for the Life Watch this Saturday. We have fun. We have fun. So that is it for me. Neil Miller, what happened on Lost this week?
Well, on this, the 15th episode, right, of season 5, Follow the Leader, It was directed by Stephen Williams. You know that because there's water shots in it. and it was written by Paul Zbyszewski and Elizabeth Sarnoff. This episode aired on May 6th, 2009, and it takes place 4 and maybe 5 days after the arrival of JIRA Flight 316 on the island. In 2007, John Locke is ready to go meet Jacob. But first, he leads Richard and Ben on an errand to the Beechcraft near the Pearl Station. Once they arrive, we learn about why Richard popped out of the jungle while John was time-skipping earlier in the season to fix his bullet wound. That's because future John Locke told him to. Wild. Back in 1977, we watch as Kate and Jack convince Eloise that she did, in fact, just kill her own time-traveling son. In return, she convinces the others to help them out with their bomb-related quest. Along the way to the bomb, Saeed shows up, kills a few red-shirt others, and joins the party. Then Kate, who remains uninspired by Jack's plan, decides to head back to Dharmaville. Back at Dharma Security HQ, Sawyer and Juliet are being interrogated by Radzinski, who remains the absolute worst. Elsewhere, the escape plan of Hurley, Miles, and Jin is interrupted by Dr. Chang, who now believes the time travel stuff. They convince him to evacuate the island, which saves baby Charlotte and baby Miles, and fills a hole in adult Miles' heart. Under the island, Jack, Sawyer, Eloise, and Richard swim through a secret underwater tunnel and eventually locate the Jughead bomb. Now all they need is a forklift, and Jack can commence with blowing up the time-space continuum, or the island, we'll see. Under the water at the docks, Sawyer and Juliet are feeling pretty good about their plan to leave on the sub and live out a Biff Tannen-like existence in the 1970s. That is, until Kate arrives, having just been captured by the Dharma cops. The whole thing ends back in 2007 on the beach as John Locke leads his entire flock of others on a new adventure. You see, they're all going to see Jacob, and John's going to kill him. Boom, lost. Okay, so this fun fact, this is going to be a wild one. Fun fact for this episode, the compass exists in a self-contained temporal paradox in that it was never created. Richard gives the compass to a time-shifting Locke, who then returns it to Richard in the 1950s. 50 years later, the compass is given back to Locke before he time-shifts, and the loop continues. This is something that was intentionally done by our friends Damon, Carlton, and the people in the writer's room. And this leads me to this week's calm question. If you could choose any item that we've seen on the island, an inanimate object, and put it into a self-contained temporal paradox, what item would you choose? And I will start. I think not only the record player, but the entire record collection in the Swan. I want to somehow only exist in some kind of time paradox, because it's fun. And that's what this question is about. Joanna, what inanimate object would you send hurling through its own time bubble?
Shoppy.
That's a great
Charlie
one.
Shoppy. Jump Charlie.
That one you could actually probably do pretty easily because you just need Charlie to find it on the island so that it only exists like within the island.
Sure.
Dave, what do you got?
Oh, what do I got? I mean, I feel like if I did something really loopy like Shannon's asthma pills, it would just be like, ooh, but not like cool. So I want to say something like Mikhail's book.
Ooh.
Like the book that he's writing is like actually a draft that he found and he thought he could finish. And then at some point it gets like shot back. And there's just there's an unfinished book constantly in that station.
And when he gets blown up near the Looking Glass station, what that really is just shooting him back in time to leave the transcript for himself.
To be like, oh, well, yeah, because he gets sucked into a Hume hole, which we all know are the water-based time holes.
I like it. The Mikhail paradox. It's fun.
Mikhail paradox.
It's Mikhail.
If it's a if we could choose like a animate object, though, I'd choose Kate's horse. Absolutely.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, we don't know that Kate's horse isn't stuck in its own temporal paradox.
True. We can't talk about that in the calm anymore.
What do you call a Hume hole on land?
A Desmond divot. Isn't that what he's left in when the hatch explodes? Isn't he left in a giant Desmond divot?
It's sure. Like a dent, Desmond dent.
Desmond dent.
Desmond ditch.
Not as Desmond ditch. Ooh, that's good. Not quite as dirty as Hume hole, but we're on our way. Since there aren't any flashbacks this episode, like a very few episodes of Lost, this is technically telling a linear narrative in two different time periods, not a flashback. Even though it could be argued that it's like maybe a Richard flashback, because he has a lot of those cool scenes that sort of converse back and forth throughout timelines. But that also means I can't do my favorite thing of starting out an episode being like, how do we structurally write a TV show so that flashbacks are feeding into the thing? So I'm going to ask an equally dumb TV 101 question to start this off, which, and I'm going to ask it of each of you, which is, who, or in singular or multiple, are the leaders that we should be following in this episode, assuming the title is correct?
Okay, lightning round. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'm going to start, and then Neil's going to go, and then I'm going to go, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Eloise.
John Locke.
Richard.
Radzinski. Uh-huh.
Jack Shepard.
Kate. Someone should follow Kate.
Sawyer. Getting off the island.
Right. Let's see. Who else is leading? Oh, Dr. Chang.
Yeah, Dr. Chang.
Leading.
Dr. Yeah. Chang. And then I don't know who's in charge of the Miles Jin Hurley contingent. Seems to be kind of Miles, right?
Yeah, Dave, they're the only group that is entirely made up of non-white people. They're the only functioning democracy.
Yes, there you go.
Good. I like all those. Then, if we have all those very possible leaders, and maybe we should follow. And I think this episode puts a lot of good, or as much weight as can, into giving us each perspective as to what people are fighting for. Maybe Saeed, they kind of fudge it towards the end there, but mm-hmm. he did shoot a child, so, you know, obviously he's willing
also,
to do some extreme things.
Not you, Charles.
I guess, theoretically, yeah. Jacob?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what I was building to. Yeah. I think it's interesting.
We forgot God, Neil.
Well, I think it's interesting that they have a whole episode called Follow the Leader, where there's a bunch of leaders with plans, and then, but really the question that sort of John Locke leaves you at the end of this episode is like, these people have been being led by this person they've had no contact with.
Mm-hmm.
And like, is that like following a leader, or is that just like blind faith in something? All of a sudden, blind faith Locke has decided he's going to attack and dethrone God. So whether or not we feel like that's a need for an antagonist check-in or not might be up for debate. But it seems like the idea of leadership and what makes you follow a leader has been shifted so much for our characters in this episode. Like, we have Ben, who we've always assumed was the master manipulator, who is cowed and only reacting in this episode. And at this point, you know, he's had a matching of wits with John Locke and Lost. And so now he's kind of, you know, following. So he's following that. And Richard, we've learned, not actually a leader, but an advisor of some sort,
mm-hmm.
who has seen God. But apparently the leader of the others doesn't have to see God. So we've talked about this a little bit in the storm, but now has come time to come and bring it to the calm, which is, how do we understand the leadership structure of the others, given that a lot of the people we listed were, you know, others?
I mean, it definitely seems like a bunch of people are being left off of email threads.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just seems that, like, anybody who can tell a good enough story about Jacob could be the leader, right? Like Ben. I love the fact that Ben is basically called out for never having met Jacob. And it's like, wait, so he just like showed up and was like, I know what Jacob's all about. I'll be the leader. That's pretty wild.
Because there's
me.
A there's a lot of, if you go back, there are a lot of times in this show where Ben has claimed that he was taking orders from Jacob.
Yeah.
And we find out later that he never met Jacob.
Like, if there is an organizational chart for the others, none of the others have ever seen it. They just keep hearing about this Jacob guy.
I mean, right, it's like, I still don't understand it. I've said this in the storm, I'll say it in the calm now. I just don't get it. Basically, like, the island has a god. His name is Jacob, allegedly. He has someone who reports directly to him, a consigliere. His name is Richard. But then there's also occasionally a mere mortal who is put in charge of a group of others, and be that Eloise or Charles or Ben or John. And that person is chosen, ? And that person gets their directions from Like, I don't get how it all works.
Yeah. And, or to what end, really, at this point?
Yeah.
Jack, for having, you know, we've talked about it in the storm, and we talked about, you know, like, why Jack commits to all of this. But of all the people who are saying they know what's going on and that they could fix it, Jax doesn't sound like a bad deal. Like, that's how he gets Eloise on board in this episode, is he's like, we're from the future, I could undo you killing your son. And that's all she really needs to hear before she's willing to, like, blow up the island and yada yada yada, Saeed shooting Eric off to Richard. Is it's just like, yeah, man, it's a crazy idea, but if it works, like, best case scenario, none of it happens. There's some weird time thing. Worst case scenario, it just breaks all time and you die and you don't have to remember the fact you shot your son. Right?
Which sounds like it's a good pitch to everyone except for Kate. Because Kate is like, pitch. I don't like it.
Yeah, Kate, this is Kate's has found some good things on the island, because she came there as a, you know, running from the law and constantly running away, and finally we've transitioned to a Kate who is running towards things, which is great and proactive, like she always should have been. But she thinks that that transformation might be dependent on the island, which is why she's getting out of there, getting out of Jack's plan, and wandering into the worst time into Sawyer and Juliet's plan. But that's,
The only thing that happens there that doesn't make a ton of sense to me is, it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me that Kate would get on that sub, because, like, her whole thing of, like, leaving Jack is like, I'm gonna go warn everyone. And, like, I know she was captured, but, like, she just seems to be getting on the sub so docilely and not, like, trying to escape.
Right.
And like, her whole thing was that she needed to find Claire. And I just don't believe that the Kate we know would, like, quietly get on that sub when it's so counter to her mission. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although, you mean, do,
like,
you have to get
yelling, like, they have a bomb, they have a bomb.
Yeah.
Do they give you the Dharma orange juice on the way back as well? Or just on the way to the island?
Are you asking if Kate's looted at the moment?
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past these Dharma people, is what I'm saying.
They loot her up. I don't know.
But yeah, no, it doesn't. It is very curious that Kate is like, I'm going to go back and rescue everybody. And then she shows up and she's like, well, got captured. Now I'm going with you guys.
The Kate back and forth of these episodes has always kind of bothered me. Like, every time I watch it, I just don't like the way that she's like, she goes with Jack seemingly on board, and then leaves him.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like for plot reasons and not for character reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see why Kate would be against Jack's plan to reset time. Right? Because
I don't know why she went with them in the first place then.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Because
maybe it's like, you trust Dan, you trust Time Daddy if he says something.
Oh.
But then Jack starts saying something.
Once it's Jack and Time Granny, you're like, no, no, no.
Yeah, you're like, I saw how Boone died. Like, you don't. No.
Fair enough.
It's a reorientation for Jack, and in order for us to absolutely realize that he's committed, the show decides to beat him in the face and make him play out a whole bunch of his scenes with the dripping red blood on his face. It works, I guess. The Jack storyline, though, is mostly once Kate takes off a little swim adventure, which I had completely forgot actually happened, because it seems kind of slight and out of the blue. But, you know, makes for some fun adventuring, and Saeed gets to come back. But it didn't even occur to me until Neil was talking in the intro that it's a Stephen Williams episode. So, of course, they were going to find some excuse to do some underwater shooting and have Jack and Richard and Ellie and Saeed all swim through an underwater rock tunnel that apparently, according to Lostopedia, was built on the bottom of a pool because you could see the bottom of the pool. I didn't notice.
I mean, that scene is an easily forgettable scene until it gets to the part where Saeed comes out of the water.
Uh-huh. I was gonna say.
And he's wet and he's in his confident tank top and he's like, hold on, let me put my hair up. And it's like,
did you say confident tank top?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I tend to think this stuff is kind of silly. Like whenever they're like, it's a temple, it's a tunnel, it's a cave, it's a whatever. I tend to think it's kind of silly. But if it means we get Saeed in his confident tank top putting his hair up, I'm for it. Mm-hmm. I'm for it.
Also, it generates a new mystery, which is how the hell are they going to lift that bomb out of there?
Yeah. Oh.
I suppose maybe that's why Kate's like, I'm sorry, we have to do what? Swim, go under the island. I'm out. Swear I'm out. Yeah.
That's I already fair. Went through this with a whole case. I'm done with underwater things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they have their hands on a bomb now, but I think the main reason that it isn't, these things aren't registering to me as much as the things we're going to talk about with Locke and with Miles and whatnot. It's literally place setting. I know that I know the finale is coming up next week. I see what you're doing. I know we're standing by this river debating if it was good to kill Eric for absolutely no reason. Like, I get it. Everybody needs to be together. We need to have more teams. And it sounds like, or it feels like, based on what Joanne was saying earlier, they kind of didn't know what team Kate was going to be on until like now-ish. And so they kind of had to reverse her and get her back for whatever reason. Is it because they couldn't have Kate there during our all Dharma interrogation? Because it would just be like, why is this outsider? Why were you guys caught with this outsider?
I think it's so that Kate could show up and ruin the submarine moment. Not her fault, but like... when Kate gets on the submarine, I will say this, and I hope it's okay to say in the calm. There is a moment in the finale that is, to me, one of the worst moments in Lost in terms of my, like, oh, no, okay? But this is up there. Mm-hmm. Sawyer, Juliet, I love you. We're going to go buy Microsoft. It's going to be great. We're going to go live our lives. Oh, fuck, it's Kate. And, you know, with love to Kate. It's just sort of like she's there to ruin the Great Escape.
Yeah.
And you could see it on Juliet's face that she knows.
My wish for Kate would have been that she would have run into our other group of escapees, Hurley, Miles, and Jin, because she would have made a good addition to that team. She's resourceful. She still needs to find Claire, you know, things like that. But yeah, putting her on the sub is like, they're obviously doing that to, you know, throw some salt into the sugar that we just got with Juliet and Sawyer. It was like, oh God, finally they figured it out. But
they figured it out. They're getting off the island, and Kate. Juliet and Sawyer get interrogated by Horace, who has no spine, Rosinski, who is the worst, and new Dharma monster, who just needed to be loved, maybe. But it doesn't matter now. You didn't love him good enough. Phil gets the idea.
Hell hath no fury like a Phil scorned.
Yeah.
By his true love, James LaFleur.
hits Juliet, and that's the end of anybody arguing in favor of Phil, at least audience-wise, and at least our audience-wise. But I feel safe saying that no, there's no Phil fans.
Sure. That also feels like a finale thing, or like a penultimate episode sort of thing, where it's like, hey, you know these guys you've been sort of on the fence about on the Dharma Initiative? Rodzinski, Phil, you're not sure if the show's going to make you like them again or not. This episode seals it. Now I'm ready for these dudes to not make it through the finale.
Rodzinski has so many lines that I'm just like, man, you are a horrible person with escalation as an attitude, and I do not like how you think things like the world runs. His like worldview that it's going to be impossible to not like, you know, end up killing somebody at some point, or that they're already at war with the hostiles. What's so important in his goddamn Swan Station? I've been inside there. It's just some time loop records.
That's right. And a nice exercise bike.
Like, don't be too excited to get down in that hatch, Rodzinski. I know how it turns out for you. Let's see. Do we need to spend any more time down in Dharmaville? Am I forgetting? Oh, God, yeah. Our three caballeros. And one of the better scenes of Lost time travel tomfoolery comes once again, courtesy of Hurley, who cannot tell who the president is or if the Korean War is a real thing at the time of 1977, which it was. And it was Johnson we had decided? I think we asked ourselves these questions. Carter.
Carter was the president back then. 77.
All right.
Crisis of confidence.
Yep. So Joanna, I have this, we're gonna jump ahead to I Married Her Coincidence Corner, which I called without consulting with any of you guys, which is, it seems like Dr. Chang comes up, quizzes the dudes, Hurley can't answer the question. He asks, are you really my son to Miles? Miles says yes. And then he asks, you know, should I really evacuate the island? And Miles gives a very convincing speech that Daniel Faraday's been right about everything else. So if he says evacuate the island, evacuate the island. Then later, they see Dr. Chang yelling at his wife and baby son. And Miles realizes that is probably what his mom saw as him being cruel and throwing them out. And does that mean Miles caused his parents' separation?
I have a question about this.
Yeah.
So, Pierre Chang, I'm saying Nymeria's. Dave is saying Lassie. Sometimes he says Harry and Anderson. But at any point, he's throwing some rocks at his family to get them to leave. Why he couldn't just like tell them there's going to be, it's too dangerous for you to stay, I don't know, but fine.
Mm-hmm.
But let's, assuming we don't know what's going, I mean, like, if he survives.
If he survives and he doesn't go back to his family, he's still a dick.
Yeah.
Well, we know whatever the incident is that he's around afterwards, because he makes a video instructing people how to use the Swan Station.
So, I don't know that. If Pierre Chang gets out of being a dick in this.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if that does, that also means that Miles gets out of causing his parents' separation, because this isn't, you know, the breaking moment.
We also don't blame the kids, Dave. David.
He is an adult.
Time-traveling adult.
He talks to his adult father.
Well, that, I mean, I guess... different. So we also have the evidence that when they ask Time Daddy, Dan, about Dr. Chang, he's like, Dr. Chang needs to do what he's supposed to do. Remember we talked about this, I think, last week?
Yeah.
So this, I think, is what he was supposed to do, was send his family away and evacuate the island, essentially. So yeah, I mean, I guess if Miles... If we're going to call Miles an active participant in his parents' breakup, it was always going to happen no matter what. You know, whatever happened, happened.
Whatever Miles did, Miles did.
Sure. You know? Yeah. And I think I love the moment for Miles. as he's watching it, like it sort of like fills in a piece of, you know, his bad dad history, basically, and sort of recontextualizes it for him. Lost is like, not only are we going to recontextualize characters for the audience, we're going to recontextualize other characters for other characters. It's very good. It's very good.
There's lots of potential little time loopy things in here. We covered the compass, we covered that, and then of course, I guess we could jump on for... Hold on. I saw something that I thought we should note, because I don't think we've noted it in the calm before, because we hadn't seen it, but we see Charles and Eloise fighting, and Charles sort of has his arm... No, she sort of has her hand over her stomach, as if the Daniel's already been, like, it's so much more traumatized for her because it's possible she didn't know she was pregnant, or like maybe she had suspicions, but like how many, you have to wait for a plane crash with the pregnancy test before you could actually like try one of those on the island, apparently. So the tragedy of Eloise, we do get reminded of that, even though last week, you know, we learned in 2007 that Widmore and Eloise were Daniel's father. That's sort of tagged again here. So we know what's at stake for her when she's willing to nuke an entire island. And our final confirmation that she now knows the person that visited her way back when they first found Jughead was her son, and that, you know, she saw him disappear and got all that. So we're up to date on the Eloise timeline more in two episodes after her being a mysterious time figure showing up to clock Desmond on things. But I think we got a pretty good tragic picture of poor time mommy.
Can I just say that, like, no, she can't be time mommy if he's time daddy, right? Doesn't she have to be like time granny?
Time granny, sure.
Time grandma. I don't remember. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have swum through that tunnel at the best of times. But definitely not when I'm pregnant.
No, good points.
Joanna's, as you know, are not tremendous swimmers.
All right. Now let's jump forward where I was going, which is back to 2007. We got a very confident John Locke bouncing around the island, causing a compass loop. But the other question has got to be, at this point, if the compass is a loop in that exact same moment, is John causing John's own death? Like, who? John told himself that he had to die after he had already tried to commit suicide, but then Ben killed him. So if John hadn't been told he needed to die, he might still have done all the same things off the island, try to get everybody back, because he was already told that was he told that by Christian, or was he also told that by Richard here for the first time? Everybody has to come back, you're going to have to die.
Richard tells him first.
Okay, so it seems like this entire quest could be a weird loop, and the only one that doesn't bother is John Locke, who is the subject of the loop, and it's very disconcerting to me now. I was thrilled because he's like not being pushed over to Ben anymore, and I enjoy seeing that, but this seems like it only took one episode from an unusual amount of confidence to like a disconcerting amount of confidence to me, the person who thinks he's an antagonist. So big motions here. But did John cause it all?
Are you saying that John is wearing too many confident tank tops?
Too many confident tank tops.
He needs to dial it back on the tank top confidence.
Yeah, he's back to his old hefting around boars by himself levels of confidence, which is season one knife hunting John. That's a
boom killing John.
Yeah. But in the same fourth dimensional thinking type of spirit that I asked the question about Miles, did John cause his own suffering loop?
I mean, maybe. It appears so. I mean, this is the thing, though. Future John has the knowledge that even if past John dies, he will come back once he gets back to the island. And yes. I think that that has proven out a lot of his faith, right?
That hiss you just heard on your podcast is steam coming out of my ears from trying to follow the John loop.
Well, yeah. So it's like, yes, he did sort of create this situation, but is that what he feels like he has to do in order to get himself back to this point? It's one of those chicken and the egg things, you know? It's like, it's in He's such like, a tight yeah. loop that it's like, all of this, I guess, had to happen.
Yeah.
He's like, you're going to have to die temporarily. What? No, you're going to have to die temporarily.
I mean, what it
Just
does
for
is...
a little bit.
This combines with the Jacob thing, and suddenly there aren't any rules. You know what I mean? Like, when Richard walks out of the jungle and says, you have to bring them all back and you have to die, yeah, there we go. When Eloise says that you have to bring them all back on this plane and it has to be all of them and your John Locke's dead body has to stand in for your father, they're all just trying to get people to these places where they know they have to be to get to now in the series, season 5, episode 15. Like, those aren't rules. Those are just things that you know happen because how time works.
Yeah, but whatever happens, happens. This is all the journal stuff that I wanted to talk about last week that I get to talk about this week. Like, basically, a reason that Eloise and the others have known so much for so long is from reading Dan's journal. And, like, I had a question last week about whether the others... Like, whether it was just Ellie who read the journals or whether others read the journals. And a listener pointed out to me something I had never noticed, which is that when Caesar is, like, rifling through Ben's office, he comes across, like, copies of the journal pages. So, like, the others had the journal pages. So, like, whatever it is that Dan wrote down about what happened, the others have been privy to. And that's why it's such a big deal when Eloise says... For the first to Penny, for the first time in a long time, I don't know what's going to happen because Dan's journal ends there at that time.
He can't write in his journal when he's dead.
Right. Yeah. So presumably he found some time to write in his journal, I don't know, on the submarine ride. Somehow, Jack and Kate and Hurley have found their way back to 1970-something, blah, blah, blah. And so Eloise reads that and she's like, well, you're going to have to go back to the island. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. This is the cheat code that she's been working off that has made her seem so wise and, you know, one step in front of stuff. It's why she knows so much about Desmond, too. Or at least, you know, why she knows enough to, like, look up Desmond and all that sort of stuff. I think that's one of the coolest things. That's the coolest. I think that's cooler than the compass time loop is the journal time loop.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I
think. Well, yeah, because it requires... You know, a lot more. I don't know. It's a lot darker to know that, like, Eloise also eventually goes through with all of, like, she sends her son back. Like, there's just something so dark about that.
Well, is the plan for blowing up the swan in the book? Because doesn't Jack say in this episode, if we do exactly what's in that book, you won't have killed your son or something like that? So that would mean that. Either this is a journal on a split timeline from something that we haven't figured out, or, like, wouldn't Eloise be living with the assumption that they did the thing in the book? And so whatever happened, happened versus did whatever happened.
I mean, I think happened. At this point, she hasn't had time to read enough of the journal.
But in the future, she would have when she sends them right. back on the Ajira flight. And wouldn't that say, you know... You got to drag an atomic bomb to the thing, like in first time through. First of all, I can't answer that for you because I know the answer and like it's weird. But like, second of all, that's I think the debate the show is supposed to be putting us in right now is like we had all these things we thought were rules. We thought they were Jacob's. We thought the others like had some sort of like tap into something. We thought that, you know, Richard had control over the situation, but it's not. He's like an advisor. They're wiping the slate clean of rules heading into the final season, which is exciting, but also like kind of frustrating based on a mystery show where we thought a lot of these things were important.
Sure.
I don't know. I think it's kind of fun.
Okay. Well, if you're having fun.
I'm having fun.
I don't want to yuck anyone's yum, especially not with Lost.
I think the general thing is fun. And I think the idea, I love the idea that like Eloise, I think we talked about this in the storm, but like the idea that Eloise either had to have a replica of that journal that she's been carrying around since the 70s made, or I think Neil suggested like she just saw it in the street in a window one day and was like, oh, mm-hmm. shit, that's the journal that I have to buy.
God, today's the day.
Today's the day, I guess. Yeah. Oh. Today's the day to tell my son that his girlfriend sucks. Like, whatever.
Yeah, let's see. I feel like I'm missing a person before we head to corners. Oh, son. Dear son. Laser-focused son. Who is convinced...
One-note character this season's son.
She's got a picture, and she thinks she knows what that picture means. And she's going to try to get back in time by following Locke to Jacob. But Locke isn't actually going to Jacob to reunite people, like he says for son. He's going to kill God. Which I think,
or is he? I don't know. That's what he just said to Ben. Who knows if that's his plan? But like follow up, because he told son one thing and Ben the other. Who is he telling the truth to? But the follow up thing is this: is this not a massive waste of son this season?
Oh like, yeah.
Ever since she got on the plane and they decided, you know what'll really tug at the heartstrings of Lost viewers? Keeping son and Jin several decades apart. But then it just becomes like Jin trying to find Sun and Sun trying to find Jin. And that's just like all they do with them. Sun's just following the leader around trying, you know, like the last cool thing she did was bonk Ben on the head. And that was pretty cool. And then before that, you know, it's been a while. So I just, justice for Sun. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And for Jin.
Yeah. She's definitely on like a Wizard of Oz quest right now where I think maybe if both her and Jin found something a little bit more than faith that they could like bridge a time gap, I think would be great. But ultimately, yeah, she's kind of used kind of like as a prop early here to give Richard a hell of an act breakout. But that's, you know, Sun's gonna go. She's on a trip to meet God, and so maybe she's gonna get she's gonna get some wishes or something. Get a monkey's paw from God. That's how that works, right? Go to church, get your monkey paw.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good, good.
That's how Christianity works. Yep.
All right. I think we're about ready to jump to some corners, unless anybody else has something that we missed from this episode that we want to poke into. Other weird timey questions?
I mean, just let's just count down to how excited I am to see Phil die for hitting Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Elizabeth Mitchell's acting. And what else do I want to say? I mean, they almost made it. Sawyer and Juliet almost made it.
So close.
So close to Microsoft options. Yeah.
I do like Sawyer's revelation that really seems like a revelation every time I watch it. Because I'm like Juliet when we like get in the sub. I'm like, well, what are you going to do now? And he's like, once we're off the island, they're just a bunch of hippies. And I'm like, oh, right. The Dharma Initiative are just a bunch of idiot hippies. I remember that now. So
I mean, someone we left out and follow the leader, and rightly so, is Horace, who gets completely neutered and dethroned in this episode. I guess it sort of... I mean, we know that he sticks around because he has to live long enough to get gassed by Ben, but he's just like really, you know, dethroned in this episode.
Yeah, and this is this might be where you know, Horace loses the team.
And what else was I going to say? I guess that's it. I guess we did everything. I'm glad Saeed's back. I mean, timeline wise, because Saeed ran off after shooting Ben, and has been just living out in the jungle ever since. But really, that's only been like, what, 2 days? Right?
Yeah, I think so. It's only day like
barely,
four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think that's it. I think we did it. I mean, this is a fine episode. It's not my favorite because I don't like the underground temple-y kind of shit or whatever. But
it is fine, but it is place setty. It's super place setty.
Yeah, it's getting the places, the pieces where they need to be on the board.
I think what I like most about this one is just some of the performance, some of the little moments. You know, you get the Hurley moment. I love Saeed's, as I called his tank top confident, his confidence with Jack when he's like, "But Jack, I have already changed the future. I killed little Ben.
I did it for all of you. I became a child murderer."
Right. And Case is like, "Actually, no, you didn't." So yeah, I think I like a lot of the performances in this one, but you know, overall it's probably the most place setty of the penultimates that we've seen thus far.
That means it's time for your corners, Neil. We have some fun Giacchino corner this week.
Oh, this one's full of fun facts about Giacchino. First, there's two new tracks from the soundtrack. One is called Follow the Leader, which, okay, that's the name of the episode. But this fun fact about this is, as of this episode, the longest piece of score. I think it's like 7.5 minutes, 8 minutes. Which is funny because here's a fun fact about the other new track. The other new track is called Sawyer Jones and the Temple of Boom, which is fun. And this theme, this mixes a bunch of different themes. And this, the Sawyer Jones and the Temple of Boom plays over like some of the submarine
going
stuff.
Away from the island and then the finding Jughead.
Yeah, and then Jack and Saeed finding Jughead. So this theme, and you know how Giacchino, especially in these later seasons, is mixing different themes together. So this mixes the Juliet and Sawyer theme, the Juliet theme, as we could call it. It also, there's a little bit of Kate's theme in there. There is the Sub's theme, which the Sub has its own theme. There is the Jughead theme. There is the second traveling theme. The mystery theme, and what is called the cliffhanger motif. So that's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different themes all mixed into one track that is used very briefly. And it's got a fun name. So yeah, good job this week, Giacchino.
The Temple of Boom is actually my favorite thing about this episode, maybe. Like that description of that underwater temple. I dig it.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, our Jungle of Mystery moment is a system of underground tunnels that underground and underwater tunnels that involve some bomb storage. Like, what is up with this ancient culture of this island and their various temples? Who knows? Why is it bombed? How are they going to get it out of there? They got it in there some different way. Maybe
is there like an ancient forklift or what's going on here?
Yeah, yeah. Some sort of geyser. They just put it in the geyser and it shoots out.
Ancient service elevator.
Yes. Right. Oh, yes, the service elevator. The Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to Sawyer, who gets knocked down while tied up, falls to the ground. That was not his fault, but is technically falling.
Almost immediately delivers, I think, his best line of the episode, where he tells Juliet, like, no matter what you tell them, they're not going to believe you. Like, this is over. It's great.
And then, you know, also splattered with a lot of red blood.
Sure.
Both Sawyer and Jack.
A lot of stage blood this
week. Take some hits. The I Married Her coincidence corner, we already said, ultimately Miles maybe causes parents' separation, but otherwise, we talked about a lot of time loops / possible coincidences. We're going to fuzz that one out. I guess I'm out of the book club. Joanna, we have a book club mention.
Oh, we're giving it to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea because Sawyer calls the guy on the sub Nemo, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what he does?
Yeah.
This was the best we could do for book club. There's too much walking and talking.
We're
at the
bottom of the
stuff.
Barrel here. Yeah. Unless Dan's journal counts.
Dan's journal book. the Saeed draw reverse button watch. We have, of course, the confident tank top and the damp hair in a bun. That's a look.
Mm-hmm. Saeed, as far as Saeed knows, when he shows back up, the buttons on his shirt died with Ben.
Neil picked this week's Jeff Jensen Recap Nickname Award.
Yeah. This one, to go along with all of our complicated feelings about the what happens in the sub, Jeff Jensen, in his recap, called this the jealousy-drizzled submarine sandwich that is Sawyer, Juliet, and Kate, which is makes me a little hungry, to be honest.
Submarine sandwich is a great name for what's happening there. All right, the Ben's talking, so it's obviously a lie award. Goes to John Locke, who says, "Whatever happens, son, you have my word. If there's a way for you and Jin to be together again, if there's a way to save our people, I'll find it." And then at the last scene of the episode is like, to be fair, might be lying to Ben then, but is like, "I don't care about my people, I'm going to kill God." Either way, John Locke is the liar this episode, usurping the title from Ben Linus. As he sort of, you know, made
and
like, his follower.
As Joanna mentioned earlier, we kind of don't know exactly who he's lying to, because, you know, he could be lying to Ben as well. He could actually secretly really want to get Sun and Jin back together. But we definitely know he's lying somewhere.
There's some sort of lie there. It's all too smiley and happy, but I'm going to kill God. Very weird. It's a woo-loo-loo, the best time travel moment, because you haven't written it yet, says Jack Shepard to Eloise about the inscription that's in her handwriting, and suddenly Eloise is like, time travel. Good job,
this might be because handwriting's sort of gone out of fashion in our lives, but do you think you could recognize your own handwriting like that, through time like that?
Yeah, because mine's like...
Yes.
Either somebody... Wow. Yeah.
I don't think I could do it. I think...
Like, if you just gave me a piece of paper,
mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't be able to recognize my own handwriting. But if a young man died in front of me and someone was like, "That's your son," and... Right? Doesn't she have some context clues before she identifies her own handwriting? Yeah.
Yeah, he says, "I'm your son."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, so that she's, so like if he, and then he handed me a thing and I saw an inscription that was like, you know, "To Dan from your mother," I'd be like, those are my janky all caps handwriting. Oh no.
Well, and also when she wrote that, she knew that was going to be the first thing she saw. So even if her handwriting had changed, I imagine she would have been pretty sure. Because she writes it already knowing what the inscription is, which,
right.
Journal loop. So maybe there's like a little, maybe there's a thing you could do so that only you could recognize your handwriting, Neil.
Little hearts over the eyes, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No one else does that.
Little smiley faces in the O's.
Little smiley.
Right.
It's time for our Jungle of Kistery. Big showdown this week out of the variable. Joanna, who in our Super Bowl of Kistery, Who's going to be kissing?
Okay, so we have decided to, for this week, I'm just going to say, before we get to last week, we have given the sub sandwich duo of James and Juliet the week off because they're just going to enjoy a victory lap because they completely crushed Penny and Desmond in the James and Juliet versus Penny and Desmond Kistery kiss-off. 60.8% goes to James and Juliet, 39.2% to Penny and Desmond. Wow.
It was never close, which was kind of surprising.
It wasn't even. And, like, the thing is, you know, the people who were voting for Penny and Desmond were like, "The Cons is one of my favorite episodes." But one of my favorite responses that I saw was someone was like, "I don't really even know who Penny is." She likes Christmas and she likes Desmond, but she's not really a full character. Whereas with James and Juliet, those are two well-rounded characters that we've gotten to know. And that's why their story is a little bit more compelling to some people.
She likes wine. Okay, that's it.
Penny?
Yeah. Yeah, right? Isn't that how they met? She was getting like boxes and boxes of wine. Yeah.
Buying wine. Doesn't like her dad.
Likes Christmas.
Is a mom now.
Mm-hmm.
Like
has a monitoring station somewhere in the Arctic Circle.
Yep.
That reports to her.
I mean, I like Penny a lot, and I'm always glad to see her, and I think Penny and Dez are a great couple, but I agree that, like, Penny isn't, like, a fully formed Lost character. Mm-hmm. She's certainly more fully formed than, like, I don't know, Sarah Shepard or a few other people that you could mention, but, like, not compared to the people who, like, have spent all this time on the island. Mm-hmm. So, there you go.
Yep, that makes sense.
So this week, with James and Juliet taking the week off, and Penny and Dez nowhere to be found, we have... Huet Said, Ellie and Richard, not you, Jack. That was submitted by our listener, Rich. Jack Sawyer and Stage Blood. That was submitted by Sin. Jack and the Butt of the Gun. That was submitted by Adam. And then Shruti is the one with the only one-on-one pairing, and that is Richard and Ben.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, bonding, yeah, over their mutual distrust.
I think John Locke's
of John
about to be a problem. Why'd you think I tried to kill him? Now is definitely Ben the time for, like, jokes, Ben.
Richard, he's an advisor, and he's had that job for a long time.
Long time.
All right, so yeah,
he let me lie about talking to God for years and years.
For years and years.
I like it, Jack of the Butt. I'm sorry,
of the Gun.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, our podcast was missing a good butt this week. All right.
Butt.
Butt. The most 1977 thing. Hey, the others have horses. You could really tell the Lost's animal handling budget went up a little bit because suddenly the others have horses.
Now they put people on the horses. Previously, it was just the Kate standing in a field with the horse. Yeah.
Exactly. The Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award goes to the only person who dies this episode, and his name was Eric, and he says, "Hey, I said stop," then Saeed shoots him in the chest.
I love how you kept mentioning Eric as if it's like, I like that you like took the trouble to find out his name and then said it a bunch of times, but like, you know, butt of Saeed's gun to my head, I could never tell you the name of that other who gets nuked here. Anyway,
I like that his name's Eric. It gives him that little bit of extra humanity. He was just doing as he was told.
And it looks like it's Eric with a K, mm-hmm, which is, you know, the Magneto way to spell it. So that's nice.
Oh no, Saeed killed Magneto. I knew he had it in him. Frank Lapidus, guess we're not going to Guam. Act Break Award goes to Richard, who says, "I watched them all die." To Sun, which is not boding well for our atomic bomb people who are with Richard in the future.
I guess my question is, why didn't Richard mention this at any of the other times when he met our Losties, right? Has he met them in like the 2004, 2007?
I don't think he's met Sun.
Right, but he's met a couple of them, right?
Who has Richard? Has Richard? He met John, obviously, from like...
But why would he mention it? If whatever happened.
Oh, I guess that's true. Neil. Like, he never would walk up to Hurley and be like, "Hey, I watched you die, by the way." It's weird. Right. It's going to happen in the past. That would be a problem for Hurley, emotionally.
It's gonna happen in the past. I mean, the answer, Neil, is because we didn't know we were going to be in 1977 until season 5 mm-hmm. of Lost, so...
It's true.
Damn you, realities of television writing. Either way, I think that's going to do it for our call this week. We will check in with you in the storm with spoilers right after this. Green Chef is the first USDA-certified organic meal kit company. Enjoy clean ingredients you can trust, seasonally sourced for peak freshness. Ingredients come pre-measured, perfectly portioned, and mostly prepped, so you can spend less time stressing and more time enjoying delicious, home-cooked meals. Green Chef makes eating well very easy and affordable, with plans to fit every lifestyle or your partner's lifestyle if you live in a studio apartment during a pandemic. Whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, or just looking to eat healthier, there's a range of recipes to suit any diet or preference.
So I got the Green Chef box this week, which means I had three delicious meals already like waiting for me in their pre-prepared little package, which really took the guesswork for me out of my week. There was like, I got to make some tasty meatloaf. There was a beautiful like pork radish rice bowl thing, really quick and easy, but fresh. And I'm a big fan of that. I think it's really cool with Green Chef that, you know, I went for the balanced living option, but you can do keto and paleo, you could do plant powered. It's really customizable, and that's something that I really loved about this particular service.
And here's a fun fact. Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh, and with a wider array of meal plans to choose from, there's something for everyone. We have switched between the brands and have enjoyed that. And now our listeners can enjoy both brands at a discount through this podcast, The Storm. You can go to greenchef.com/90storm and use the code 90storm to get $90 off, including free shipping. That's greenchef.com/90storm and use the code 90storm, 90storm, to get $90 off, including free shipping.
Now is the time of the podcast where we like to thank our Small Council Patreon subscribers. Those are the folks who are at the $10 level or above. We used to be a Game of Thrones podcast. That's why they're called the Small Council still. We got a couple newcomers, so we will start by thanking them. Amy Randall, Reagan Hunter, Quick and Dirty Recordings, Kat Stromberger Perez, Lori Carmichael Howell, Caroline of the North, Patrick Graton, I don't know, it sounds like a great last name, Cindy M., Eric Carey, Chris Abisgard, Jenna Paul, Jackie Pulowski, David Matheson, Trevor Ead, Sam D'Angelo, Doug Robson, Vera Johansson, Gear Arfishog, Eric Studd, Maureen Maurer, and Rob Perryhall. Thank you so much.
And I would like to add to those thanking more Small Council members, Michael R. Cleland, Cecily Stepney, Matthew, Kaylee Hicks, David Adams, David Moran, AJ Cabbage, Del Martinez, Mark Larson, Michelle Cahill, Ben Grieving, Christopher Bajonak, Gabriel Colorado, Kate Thrams, Jeff Ruberg, Laura Attu, Benjamin Jacobra, Reginator Cakes, DJ Empirical of the Theme, and Phil Jackie Meme Lord.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Jessica Lair, Manu Mishra, Megan McLeod, Matthew Punamali, David Koplos, Lily Lim, Derek Dock, Louise Collins, Philip Durrett, Tyler Iman, Karen Frost Arnold, Gregory Gergarian, Brandon Lutenny, Kelly Stollard, Melanie Rodriguez, Sarah Carmichael, Spencer Howard, Michael Sample, Rosa Peretta, and Ashish Sridharan. Thank you all so much for being members of the Small Council.
And we're back for the storm here.
Pew, pew.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, pew, pew. High energy. Pews. It's all here. Sometimes Joanna runs it. Sometimes I run it before I hand off to Joanna. Actually, it's going to be mostly Joanna on here. And as long as she lets me and then doesn't throw it back in my face. We saw the last scene of alive John Locke on the island this week. Ever.
Aww.
Real alive John Locke on the island. Gets blipped out of Compass Land, and that's the last we're going to see of John Locke.
He gets taken down by Flock.
Taken down by Flock. Yep, Neil almost making me break in his summary. Working the Flock in there, but we're definitely in peak Flock period, because next week he kills Jacob, and it becomes pretty apparent shit's going down.
Mm-hmm.
Does he kill Jacob?
No, he doesn't kill Jacob. What about me, Ben?
I mean, I guess
Jacob.
You could say Ben is the knife that Locke is wielding,
mm-hmm.
and his knife has a knife.
His knife right? has a knife.
But I mean, like, you know, I don't know if we've spent enough time really looking closely at all the ways in which Locke in these episodes is pushing Ben towards that moment. And that definitely happens in this episode. Mm-hmm. But first, let's do some emails. And it's funny that you mentioned Locke, because that's what most of our emails here are about.
Hey!
Because I brought up in last week's Storm section this idea that without John alive in the final season to be experiencing all these mysteries, we lose a little something. And we got a bunch of emails about it. So Matt writes in and he says, coming off the episode this week, which includes some of my favorite Locke moments, despite it not actually being Locke, I wanted to bring up what Terry O'Quinn brought up in an interview around the Lost finale. I had all of season 7 not knowing that I was in fact that character. I was just being John Locke, who now wasn't as afraid. So Terry O'Quinn did not know that he was playing the Man in Black. Mm. He thought he was playing an unafraid John Locke. So that's kind of interesting.
John Locke, okay. Unburdened by the limits of mortality.
Confident tank top John Locke. So, so Matt goes on to say, I think we can use this as a template of how to use Locke in this hypothetical version of the show. Bring him back and let him already have those answers. He very confidently knows exactly where slash when time jumping Locke is in this episode. And as far as Terry O'Quinn was concerned, while filming the scene, that was Locke. Personally, I think Terry O'Quinn's performance satisfies my craving for answers more so than Dojin, Jacob, or even Jack's portrayals could ever hope to. Per this new idea of Locke himself was giving out the answers to our Losties in season 6, the audience may have accepted it a little more because the answers they are getting are coming from a man that we trust because, we watched him pine after those answers for 5+ seasons, not given to us by some new rando in the temple or Hurley's guitar case written on a piece of paper we as viewers never get to read. I hate that fucking Ogg in the guitar case. So stupid. Okay. Just imagine a finale where instead of Jacob manifesting from ashes at a campfire, where even Ghostbuster Hurley doesn't know what's going on, Locke is there, already resurrected per Island Magic a season and a half ago, to give our Losties their final mission. Sorry if my email was long, but what do you think? Thanks for all you've done with this rewatching experience, and never tighten up, Matt. And then he says, side note, Elizabeth Mitchell would be a perfect Smokey. I would love to see her team up with Dark Sun 2 in this fan fiction.
Oh, I like that. That little PS at the end is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
so basically this idea that like instead of, you know, Smokey, could we have had a, you know, I've been to the other side and come back with all the answers, John Locke.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been thinking about this since we talked about it last week, and I kind of hate how much I like this, where it's like, oh, the theory of the case now is the ending of Lost is still pretty good, but it would have been better if they didn't kill John Locke. Like, it would have been better if that was actually John Locke. And it's really growing on me, and, you know, like all great theories, it's annoying that I like it so much.
If it was John Locke, at some point there would be a Juliet Smokey that comes in after the incident to still provide that role? Or would John Locke still need to be anti-Jacob at this point when filled with island answers?
I don't know.
Because I think it could work because Jacob's a bad dad god. Like, if next week's episode didn't include him fucking touching everybody, which is like almost show-breaking the more you think about it, then the idea that John Locke's answers are like he should be in control of the island makes him the antagonist?
A little bit.
Excuse me.
But I think that like it would have created an interesting central conflict for season 6 to have it be about like maybe John meets Jacob and doesn't kill him but realizes that he's not who he thought he was. And so then the part of it is John Locke sort of battling Jacob through season 6 that, you know, ultimately causes them to, I don't know, somehow it still needs to end up with Hurley being in charge.
Well, yeah, but if it still ends with the same thing and it just becomes John Locke convinced Jacob is doing bad and Jack, who learns that Jacob has been stalking all of them and then decides to fight John Locke, that's like
it's not bad.
It's not bad, but aren't you in dangerous territory of like completely flipping Game of Thrones, like your protagonist antagonist coin and being like, wait a minute, Jack was fighting for what now? For the bad god? Like, right?
Maybe.
Like, if John isn't evil incarnate, then he's still John Locke, and we like John Locke.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe Jacob, maybe John, like, sides with Jacob, and it causes tension with Jack.
And Jack becomes Lyra Belacqua and just tries to kill God. Mm-hmm. All right, this email comes from Joe, and he says, the answer is the echoes we met along the way. He says, I wanted to give my input on the discussion you three had at the End of Storm section for the episode covering the variable. While I agree with Joanna that the answers to the mysteries of the island in the final seasons are not as impactful in the audience because Locke isn't alive to discover them and share his input on them, I'm on Dave's side of the argument that the smoke monster should take the form of Locke since it's integral in manipulating Ben to kill Jacob and also helps complete Jack's arc in becoming the man of faith. Lost is my all-time favorite show, and I would not change a thing about it, but there will always be a part of me that would have loved to have seen Echo make it through the show because he was initially intended, and here's where I feel his presence would have been felt the most. It's been said in previous interviews that Echo was supposed to at first be a foil to Locke, but then eventually be on the opposite side of the man of faith spectrum, counterbalancing Locke. If Echo was still around, it would have been really interesting to see how he, a Catholic priest, reacted to the resurrection of Locke, and how it would have been explored and compared to the resurrection of Jesus, just as Terry O'Quinn suggested to Dave. Echo was also the other character like Locke who was invested in the mysteries of the island, like when they were finding new hatches together, or when Echo started pushing the button when Locke stopped. If Echo was still around, I believe we as an audience would have felt more emotional payoff to the answer to the island in season 6 because there still would have been a character who cared about the mysteries to receive the answers. So Joe mm-hmm. also suggests we never tighten up. The end. So
Echo. Yeah. Good. Yes.
Echo.
Yeah. I mean, I like this one too.
There's not a lot of characters. There are a few characters that we've lost along the way that I feel like, you know, could have maybe done something interesting in the final season, but really, I think that says more about the uninteresting things that are done in the final season than it does about the characters. Because I like most of the characters we get. And it's not that I dislike the finale now that this idea of an actual evil Locke is floating around. But it's, yeah, I don't know. The series wants to be epic, and it ends kind of swinging for those epic fences, but what it's sounding like in our discussion now is we were kind of make it a little smaller, like refocus back on the characters even more than you think you did, like on both sides of the flashes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this email comes from Dee. It's also about John Locke and Smokey. And Dee says, I found your commentary on the mysteries disappointment in the end and how having John Locke around would have been more interesting as he's the only one who cared about the mysteries on the island. While on one hand I agree it's a shame no one else is really that invested, I think this all served the fully formed arc of Jack. I'm generally on team not Jack. However, you've mentioned the journey of him going from man of science to man of faith. It's essential to the story. If John Locke was still around, there would be no question for me as to who would become the next Jacob. Jack seemed the obvious choice, followed by Hurley, but that's because of how he's changed by that point. I also think Locke would have known right away not to set off the bomb and been more persuasive to Sawyer, maybe not even fallen for the sub in the first place, so he hadn't been on there. Anyway, the general gist is that it has to be Jack in the end. He has to make the journey to becoming a man of faith. He has to choose to be the next Jacob and sacrifice his life. We've dealt a lot with his horrible moments, so this change matters. If Locke is there to do it for him, it's not a change. Even if he was furious that he was a pawn for the gods of the island, he still would have stepped up for the island, thus taking that journey away from Jack's growth. It wouldn't have been a full growth for Locke to want to be Jacob or to save the island. That was already who he was. And no one else with John Locke would have been right for Smokey to possess. I think he picked Locke because Locke already made a name for himself on the island. There's no way Richard would have been cool with letting Locke and Ben into the Jacob's Temple if it was anyone but Locke. None of the other Lossies were really that important to Richard, who more or less held the keys in that moment to Jacob's spot. It's because he was told by Locke that he was the future leader of the others that he immediately believed in him and his place there. That's the only person who would have managed to get that trust. Also, Terry O'Quinn kills the role, and I can't imagine anyone else. I think it's a big deal for the show to have the last showdown between Jack and quote-unquote Locke, as they were the most famous characters at that point. Anyone else being Smokey wouldn't have had the same energy. And it was also touching for Jack's memory of Locke, that he's able to see through Smokey and know it wasn't Locke. and in his name kind of try to get rid of the ghoul using his face. Sorry for the long email. D. So, it's all in service of Jack. I agree. I mean, like, this is when, this is definitely, you know, like, for all that we are frustrated with Jack often, his arc is still the arc that the writers of the show feel like is the central thing. He is the character that makes the most movement in the end. And can he make that movement without losing Locke in order to do so?
Yeah. Mm. Well, this episode especially is setting him up as being on the opposite end of where he has to end up. Because when he's in the church at the end, what he learns is the island time was the time, you know? Like, you make soul fucking bonds with those people. And that's sort of what Kate is trying to get him to think about here in this episode. But he refuses to, because Jack would rather have not made any mistakes at all than accept that mistakes help him grow. Unlike someone like, you know, Locke, who won't go back to his time traveling self because he needed all those mistakes, you know, to get there. Locke already knew that before he died, and Jack needs to get there. But then he'll die, and then they'll all be in the same glorious church.
Sure.
Right?
All right.
Yeah. And I mean, I still think it's, I keep thinking about the previous email about adding Mr. Echo back in. Cause I think that does, if you had Mr. Echo still around and had multiple seasons of sort of continuing the debate of, like, you know, how do we interpret what the island is doing? You maybe don't even need to ever have Jacob and the Man in Black show up at the end. Like, we don't need those characters to be real. Right. So then the argument is between, like, three mortals who are trying to interpret sort of the island mysteries that are never fully explained anyway. I don't know. I think you could still do something interesting with that. But I like that we keep having good arguments on both sides of this, whether John Locke, whether killing John Locke was a bad idea or not.
Yeah. No, I think there could be a way that, like, it's everybody. The thing that I would be hesitant about, as if I was like an associate producer on Lost or something, is I would be like, if you're gonna do the bad God thing, maybe don't insinuate that that's also the Christian God. And so that's where I could see, like, Echo getting complicated in that. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I have a good segue to our next email. Yeah. But and I think, you know, something that a number of people that we've talked to, and we know this because Damon Lindelof, like, kind of did some episodes of a Twin Peaks podcast when that show came back, is that Damon loves Twin Peaks. And so this idea of, like, an evil spirit occupying the body of a beloved character is something that he was always going to be interested in doing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right? So.
Sorry. No, I was just like, was that part of Twin Peaks out at the time? But then I realized that if I wanted to talk about that, I was A, wrong, and B, spoiling way too much of Twin Peaks for people. So never mind.
Mm-hmm. All right. This one comes from Nicole, who's written in the past about some of the religious themes of the episodes. And she writes, she tries to tighten up her email. It's still a little long, but we will do our best. I don't believe that you've totally delved into the concept of Dharma and its somewhat contrasting companion, the Christian concept of calling. I'm a yoga teacher and an ordained Christian clergy, so I find both fascinating. I'll take a brief crack at it at the risk of oversimplifying. Dharma is usually understood as purpose or duty. In my understanding of yogic philosophy, it's about knowing your place or role and living it to the fullest. It seems that the Dharma Initiative has that understanding of Dharma. Participants test into certain jobs or roles that serve the higher purpose of the initiative. Jumping out of your station is frowned upon, as evidenced by the use of the biblical story and imagery. The writers of Lost are also playing with the Judeo-Christian idea that a higher being can call anyone into a higher purpose for any role. Or they cheat and steal their way into it, like Jacob stealing Esau's birthright. I don't think the writers are advocating for one or the other. I just think these concepts are interwoven into the fabric of the series and embedded in motivations for characters. Some characters actively grapple with their purpose, John or Desmond. Others stumble into it, like Jack, Kate, or Charlie. Others just seem to know it, like Hurley. But all are at their best when they are living fully into their Dharma/calling. Both traditions share this understanding in common. Here come the bullet points. Some examples. Charlie coming to understand his purpose and giving his life to save Dez and the other Losties, even though he didn't really need to die. John knowing his purpose is trying to understand and defend all things island. Kate finding purpose in mothering Aaron and coming back to the island out of loyalty to Claire. Desmond leaving his first almost marriage to go to the monastery only to find his purpose in Penny. Jack getting on Team Island at the end of season 6. Hurley when he's building up the community, providing therapy, leading ritual, making garlic mayo, etc. Though I watched the series when it aired, I had never done a rewatch until now, so I'm eager to find out if this series holds up at the end. I do think that there are enough threads in the series to unravel for a pretty good conversation at the least. And then she asks us to not tighten up. There's a PS that I'll get to if you guys want to hear more, but I want to hear your first reaction to this.
I like it. I'm a little bit hesitant to speak on how much Dharma applies to this because it's a fiction, and I kind of feel like one of the goals of it is sort of like being true to like that best part of you and like leaning into your skills. The, you know, Desmond sort of being called or dharmically manipulated to, you know, try to save Charlie or to help Charlie with his decision sort of thing. So I like it, and I agree that there's lots of ways that it's being used in the story. The reason I'm hesitant to sort of like bring that into the real world is because I feel like Dharma and religious callings are very much a feeling more than they're like a logic. So for us, I could watch season 1 and know Hurley's place, but like I don't even know if the show really knows Hurley's place until he's trying to convince Sawyer that, you know, Sawyer needs to make fun with the camp. It's like at that point Hurley really clicks into like this, he's gonna make everybody feel good. Then we have to get through a lot of like, is he crazy / you know, fat shaming stuff in season 1 before Hurley's dharma is really apparent. So in terms of like a fiction, I think them leaning into their dharma isn't always a choice as much as it is the audience and the writers and the actors all like group discovering a character in an amazing way. But I guess if Dharma technically applies to that sort of magic, maybe I'm just like being too specific about what it takes to get into the cosmic flow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that by the end of the show, they get to a really interesting sort of point or revelation about, you know, the nature of faith. And also this idea that like, you know, make the most of the time you have, because you never know like what the, you know, what is the most significant time in your life. And I think, but I am a little hesitant sometimes to overinterpret some of the religious symbolism that they use in this show, because there is some of it that it feels like it's just stuff that they kind of throw at the wall. And, or stuff that's there to, you know, sort of confuse or muddy the waters a little bit around some of the mysteries, and so I think that's sort of the only thing that I would think about it.
I want to ask you, I don't know nearly as much as Nicole does about these particular spiritual ideologies, but I was reminded reading her email, I was reminded of the Campbellian, Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey, which I know Dave is very familiar with, and I just thought we might talk about that for a little while. So I'm gonna read out the steps of the Hero's Journey according to Joseph Campbell.
CMOM College
and
was worth it.
If you're listening and you've never heard Dave or me talk about it, or Neil, I don't know, Neil, if you talk about this or listen to an episode of Harmontown, it might be easy to understand and follow along if you think about Luke Skywalker on this journey, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we start with Ordinary World, right, which is moisture farming, right?
Which is, I need to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters.
Okay, actually, yeah, I'm just going to read the Campbell thing, and then Dave, you can supply the Luke Skywalker analog. Call to Adventure.
What is it? My droid has escaped into the desert looking for a space wizard.
Isn't it? Help me, a hot princess hologram has shown up.
Sure.
And said, help me. Refusal of the call.
That is, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And Obi-Wan Kenobi's like, you should do this, Luke. And Luke's like, no, man, I'm a farmer. Like, my dad was a farmer. And then Obi-Wan Kenobi's like, no, he wasn't.
Okay, slightly out of order then. Meeting the mentor.
Oh, hey. Well, that is... he attempts to refuse the call and he leaves and he realizes that the stormtroopers are going to go home and Aunt Beru is like dead there. And Obi-Wan's like, I could teach you the ways of the Force now. And he's like, yeah.
All right. Crossing the threshold.
He has to go off planet with the old Han Solo.
Tests, allies, and enemies.
That it's time to go rescue a princess after we get sucked into a tractor beam.
Approach the dragon's den.
The Darth Vader's here.
The ordeal.
Darth Vader killed my wizard.
Seizing the treasure.
We have the princess and she has the droid and oh my god, Death Star plans.
The road back.
Time to go blow up the Death Star because they torched my home on the desert planet that still has slavery that we don't talk about.
Resurrection.
Metal ceremony.
Return with the boon.
I'm receiving the metal ceremony. Okay, resurrection is actually Han Solo comes back after saying he was going to leave and clears the way for Luke to fire the thing into the thing. And then the reward ceremony is actually coming back with the boon.
Great. So, you know, I think it's interesting to think of Jack Shepard on this journey, to think of, you know, maybe John Locke is his mentor. We know that Jack has definitely refused the call. There are tests, there's trials. He refused the call so often that he got all the way off the island and then had to go back. And, you know, like the final season is a lot of this approach, the dragon's den, the ordeal, seizing the treasure, the road back, resurrection, return of the boon, all that sort of stuff. But anyway, I just think that's interesting that like the call to adventure, which is that very important first step of the hero's journey, and your calling, your spiritual calling, and how both of them can that could be a secular way into thinking about this spiritual concept of dharma, et cetera.
Oh, I kind of like that.
Was that a worthwhile segment?
Yeah. Because the other thing is you have to, in order for it to be an emotionally satisfying story, you have to be called and then you have to say, no, that's not me. But then like fate, the world, everything comes together and is like, it is you. This is your hero's journey. So I could definitely draw a parallel there. I like it.
So there we go. We did it, Dave. We got the story wheel into the Lost podcast.
We did it. All right. I guess as a way out, I have a thought for Neil, who picked an object of a record player in a record collection. Do we know for sure that isn't in the time bubble, considering it's present at the incident explosion and at the hatch explosion?
I mean, it's entirely possible. Although, you know, we know that the hatch that our Losties encounter is built after the incident, right? Or it's the incident sort of tears it up and they have to redo it.
That's what we assume. It could have sucked some records and record players in there.
I like it.
You picked an object and I started thinking about it in the calm and I'm like, we don't like, where do the records go? It's, we don't see like records in the jungle after the hatch explodes or anything. Like they went the way of Desmond's clothes.
They shoot right back in time, back to the point where Kate is murdering Juliet by not saving her.
No. All right. Did we talk enough about Richard and Ricardus?
Oh, I wanted to pass.
We just wanted to say Ricardus in the storm.
Because once we get to Aviterno, he is just Ricardus to me.
Sure. Why couldn't Richard have just been Jacob secretly? That could have been fun. I don't know.
That would have been really fun.
Yeah. He's just like, Jacob's right in here, and he just like walks behind a pillar and then walks out the other side.
And
of the
there's
pillar.
There would have been like a whole episode in season 5 of like Mr. Echo and Richard just playing like chess and talking. That would have been great. I'd have been
what
into
if he
it.
What if he said, Jacob is right here, and then pointed at Ben's heart?
He's always been right here.
Oh my god, I love what happens to Ben in this next episode. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. Something that Emily also wrote in her recap for this episode. She says the episode's ostensible focus probably turned its eye on Richard, though it didn't do anything so bold as flashback through his long history on the island. That I'm sure will be safe for season 6 and its many info dumps. And it's true. Mm-hmm. We get mm-hmm. not the whole history of Richard on the island, but we get the Richard origin story. The more I think about it, the more I love Abiturno. Across the Sea is still never going to be my favorite episode, but I just really love Abiturno. I think it's really good. It's very satisfying to find out that Richard came on the Black Rock. So good. Anyway.
All right. So I guess we're going to kick off the end game next week. Neil, mm-hmm. where are we going?
We are going on a journey with Jacob, the off-island traveling god figure. That was the most striking thing when I rewatched this before we started the season was, oh my god, I forgot how much of this is just like Jacob touching people randomly off-island. We're gonna watch.
Do you feel like he goes off-island all the time just to piss off his brother who can't leave?
That feels very sibling. Like to
do
me.
You think Jacob comes back? He's like, oh man, you should have been at this wedding I just went to in Korea. Mm-hmm. The food was amazing, and I touched some people.
He probably did that for a while, but now he just mostly goes offshore to get wool for his loom because, like, sure. There are no sheep on the island.
Yeah, he was just bored.
How are you going to weave in those sheep? A polar bear fluff? Yeah, well, exactly. Actually,
maybe.
You can.
I don't know. Yeah, so we're watching The Incident. Parts 1 and 2 next week, and it's gonna be a tearjerker.
Do you guys know what the part of the incident that kills me every time?
Mm.
When Juliet dies?
When Kate fails to save her? I mean,
that's a bummer. When Kate kills Juliet, it's a real bummer. Actually, it is when they find Rose and Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bernard's like, I don't care where we are as long as I'm with her. Juliet looks at Sawyer and Sawyer looks at Kate. It's so upsetting. All right, I'm done.
Well, we could all see Joanna live chat this Saturday. As
I'm
going to
lose my mind.
The incident. Until then, tell people where they could find more of you online. Joanna Robinson.
VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
Well, always over at the FilmSchoolRejects.com on Twitter at Rejects. And currently in our Slack, Patreon.com/StormOfSpoilers, we are watching Legend of Korra. We just finished the first season. It's fantastic. So there you go.
I'm so happy you're enjoying
it. Come on!
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me in the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where this week we talk about Search Party. And hilariously, Matt Patches decides to try to keep us in the spoiler-free discussion. And me, perfectly trained at doing this, doesn't mess up while David Ehrlich and Katie Rich just proceed to spoil all of Search Party. So if you watch Search Party, absolutely listen to Fighting in the War Room. I think we have a good talk about it. Otherwise, I will be here on this podcast every week, telling you at the end, do not fall down.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.